Will everyone in the Missouri Senate please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
Oswald Chambers reminds us we have to pray with our eyes on God and not on the difficulties. These days, Lord, increase the tension we know, for we approach a time when the session will end and our work for this time will end. And we have much we still have to do and want to accomplish. On this National Day of Prayer, help us to keep our eyes on you and not the problems and conflict we see about it, so our efforts are true and directed in what you see as truly important that we can bring to completion. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Barnett, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Days, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer, Justice, Lager, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Nadler, Pierce, Ferguson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Schmidt, Scott, Shields, Schumacher, Smith, Stouffer, Vogel, Wilson, Wright Jones.
Senator from Lawrence, Senator from Webster. Quorum is present. The Senate is in session. Read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 66th day, Wednesday, May 6, 2009. The Senate met pursuant to a...
Senator from St. Francois.
Mr. President, I move the further reading of the journal be dispensed with, the same being as truth, though have been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are depending, it shall prevail. Say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The reading is dispensed with. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Senator from Clay.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a resolution.
Send your resolution forward. Senator, you care to explain and move adoption?
Just briefly, Mr. President, the resolution has to do with recognizing the month of May as Skin Cancer Awareness Month, and I would move for its adoption. Thank you.
Senator, we will print it in the journal.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. The Senator from St. Francois.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, we have conferees to read in, if you would have those read in.
We do, Senator. Read the conferees.
Conference committee appointments on Senate substitute for Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute for House Bill 376 as amended. Senators Griesheimer, Dempsey, Vogel, Schumacher, and Justice.
Mr. President, do we have messages from the House?
We do. Read the messages from the House.
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted Conference Committee Report on Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2 and has taken up and passed Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2. Also, the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee report on Senate substitute for Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 3, and has taken up and passed the Conference Committee substitute for the Senate substitute for the Senate Committee substitute for the House Committee substitute for House Bill 3. Also, the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 4, and has taken up and passed Conference Committee substitute for Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 4. Also, the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 5, and has taken up and passed the Conference Committee substitute for the Senate Committee substitute for the House Committee substitute for House Bill 5. Also, the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 6, and has taken up and passed the Conference Committee substitute for Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 6. Also, the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 7, and has taken up and passed Conference Committee substitute for Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 7. Also, the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 8, and has taken up and passed the Conference Committee substitute for Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 8. Also, the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 9, and has taken up and passed the Conference Committee substitute for Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 9. Also, the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 10, and has taken up and passed the Conference Committee substitute for Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 10. Respectfully, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator?
Senator from Jasper for a privileged motion.
The Senator from Jasper. Sir, have you a motion, a privileged motion?
Yes, Mr. President, I do have a privileged motion.
State your motion,
Mr.
sir.
Mr. President, I would move that the conference committee substitute for House Bill 2 be taken up for third reading and final passage.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is, the conference committee report is before.
Mr. President, I would now move that the conference committee substitute for House Bill number 2 be read a third time and finally passed. This is the operating budget for elementary and secondary education, and I would be happy to respond to any questions.
Any senator wish to be heard? The senator from the first.
The senator from Jasper.
Does the senator yield?
I yield.
Proceed.
Senator, just real briefly, I just want to point out one thing to the body and get your take on it. So the total of House Bill 2 is $5.4 billion. Is that correct?
That's correct. $5,424 million.
Mm-hmm. Right. And trying to remember about 6 short years ago when I came into the House, the expenditures on House Bill 2 and House Bill 11 were relatively the same, if I recall correctly. We were spending, I think, a little bit more on K-12 public education than we were on social programs through House Bill 11. And as I look at the latest version of House Bill 11 that's in front of me, the total now is $7.4 billion, $2 billion difference. That's kind of a troubling trend, isn't it, Senator?
Well, I mean, it certainly is a trend. I would say in both instances, their entitlement, the educational entitlement is in the form of the funding, the foundation formula that this General Assembly wrote, and we've created an obligation for growth in spending in that area as a priority of the state. The growth in House Bill 11 is more driven by federal mandates that also form maintenance of effort, entitlement requirements, but that is a shift that has occurred.
I'm curious. I would agree with that, by the way, Senator. I mean, although we have a constitutional responsibility to fund and support public education, I don't think that we have the same for the social programs. What would have happened to House Bill 11 if we would have had the expansion of 35,000 in this bill? Would the number have been any different?
It would not have been different.
Wouldn't have been different because of the way it was going to be paid for.
Correct.
Dish payments and
correct.
Federal monies. And
correct.
Okay. All right, I just wanted to point that out. I think that our commitment to public education has been a number one priority of this body, but I just think it's troubling that it seems like, you know, I think the way you point out your priorities down here is where you spend the people's money, right?
That's true where you have true discretion. As with regard to our conversation yesterday, there has been for some time an erosion of the independence of action by states and an increase in the reach and scope of federal power and direction to state activities to the extent that of the 24 billion or so that we'll be dealing with here, the true discretion really exists on more like 7 or 8 billion of that number. So, you know, three-fourths of the process is driven elsewhere.
So that's that terrible federalism coming in again, huh?
Well, I think it's anti-federalism. Federalism is the suggestion that the states actually have a sovereign role in directing their own affairs in a federation of states. This is more a central national approach.
Okay, let me rephrase that. It's Hamilton's curse then again, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator.
Senator from the 11th.
May I briefly inquire the Senator from Jasper?
Senator from Jasper, yield.
I yield.
Proceed.
Senator, I know it's been a long week. I'm just going to briefly inquire of you under House Bill 2, the Parents as Teachers program, is that within this?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Is that receiving a cut in some way from last year?
Repeat?
Is that receiving a cut?
Yes, it is.
Okay. What's the cut in that?
10%.
Okay. Can you... Yeah, could you just kind of briefly explain? Could you kind of briefly explain that cut? I mean, the kind of why it was necessary to cut that?
Well, I mean, there were the House vehicle that I the House vehicle that came over had additional cuts to the governor's original cut list to try to deal with our budget shortfall in our general revenue fund stream, and so there are reductions all through the budget.
Okay, so that was part of, was 10% just the standard, so you're saying that this was... In other things,
there was
as well.
The House's approach was generally a 10% across the board cut, and the Senate position sort of ranged in that 5 to 10% range as we attempted to restore with some stabilization dollars some of those cuts, but we had to take some cuts in order to make sure that we were on a sustainable balanced budget path with general revenues moving forward.
Okay, well, as I'm sure this is true of many things in appropriations, I mean, this was, I just noted that because, I mean, it was one of the more successful programs, and I just certainly had a question as to why.
Well, I mean, frankly, Parents as Teachers nationally is a program that grew out of the state of Missouri. I mean, it was a creation of Senator Bonds, and it has a great heritage in this state and is a valuable program. Okay. But I will say at the outset, throughout this budget, you will see spending cuts in valuable programs that are high priority. And there's no way to get the spending down without doing that. We've all of these programs have constituencies, and they all have value.
Right. And the federal dollars that we're plugging into education, even with all of those, we still needed to cut. Is that what?
Well, the federal dollars are helpful in allowing us to minimize the level of the cuts that we have to absorb. But if we were to plug them in fully and try to continue a sustained maintenance of effort at current funding levels, you would encounter a total fiscal disaster in 2011, even with an economic recovery and increased general revenue sources. The programs have outgrown our ability to pay for them at their natural growth level.
Okay. And I'm sure this is non-unique to appropriations, but did the Parents as Teachers program, were they kind of informed of the cut and that they'll make do and just do less, 10% less, or, I mean, those things that receive cuts, are they, does this return them to, like, a level of 2 or 3 years ago?
Probably about where they were 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay. Thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Thank you.
Any other senator wish to be heard? Senator from Jasper is recognized to close.
I close.
The senator from Jasper renews his motion on adoption of the conference committee report to House Bill 2. Call the roll on adoption of the House committee report, after which we will roll call the bill.
Senators Varnas, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Days, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer, Justice, Lager, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Knobler, Pierce, Ferguson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Schmidt, Scott, Shields, Schumacher, Smith, Stouffer, Vogel, Wilson, Wright-Jones.
Senator from the 1st, Senator from Monroe, Senator from the 8th, Senator from 13th, Senator from St. Clair, Senator from Clay, Senator from St. Francis, Senator from Webster, Senator from Cape, by your vote of 31 aye, 1 no, the conference committee report has been adopted. Senator from Jasper.
Mr. President, I would now move that the conference committee report on Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute for House Bill number 2 be read a third time and placed upon final passage.
Heard the motion. Does any senator wish to be heard? Seeing none, the senator is recognized to close.
I close.
The senator renews his motion on third reading and final passage of the bill as amended by the conference committee report. Call the roll.
Conference committee substitute for Senate substitute for Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute for House Bill 2 an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the State Board of Education and the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education et al. Senators Barnett, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Days, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer, Justice, Lager, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Nadler, Pierce, Ferguson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Schmidt, Scott, Shields, Schumeyer, Smith, Stouffer, Vogel, Wilson, Wright Jones.
Senator from 23rd. Senator from Cape Girardeau. By your vote of 31 aye, 1 no, the bill has been third read and finally passed. Without objection, let the journal show the titling and perfecting motions were made and carried. Senator from St. Francis.
Mr. President, can we go to the business of reports of standing committees?
Reports of standing committees.
On the order of business, reports to standing committees. Senator from St. Clair.
Mr. President, your Committee on Financial and Governmental Organization and Elections has an excellent report.
Send your excellent report forward. Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Financial and Governmental Organizations and Elections, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 228, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 883, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 681, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Ways and Means has a report.
Send your report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Ways and Means, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 381, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the House Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Respectfully, Senator Vogel, Chairman.
Senator from Green.
Mr. President, your Committee on Health, Mental Health, Seniors, and Families has a report.
Send your report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Health, Mental Health, Seniors, and Families, to which is referred Senate Bill 546, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully, Senator Champion, Chairman.
Senator from the 8th. Send the report from the Judiciary Committee forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Judiciary and Civil and Criminal Jurisprudence, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 187 and 235, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, to which was referred House Bill 170, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, to which was referred House Bill 116, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully, Senator Bartle, Chairman.
Senator Senator Webster, you have a report.
The Interior Committee on Agriculture, Food Production, and Outdoor Resources has a report.
Send your report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Agriculture, Food Production, and Outdoor Resources, to which is referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 250, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Respectfully, Senator Clemens, Chairman.
Senator from the 11th.
President, your Committee on Progress and Development has a report.
Before I take that report, can I inquire of you?
You may, Mr. President.
Is that the report on Real ID?
Yes, it is, Mr. President.
So that would be the same bill that I have been called Judas because I haven't taken that in?
I am unaware of such accusations.
I think that
was none by me.
In the paper today. So send that report forward.
Here it comes, Mr. President.
Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Progress and Development, to which is referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 361, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully, Senator Callahan, Chairman.
Senator Powell.
Mr. President, I have to remind you that Judas did hang himself, so we'll have to watch that. But Mr. President, your Committee on Governmental Accountability and Fiscal Oversight met, we studied, and decided to let go of a few bills that we thought worthy of this body. So thank you very much.
Send the report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Governmental Accountability and Fiscal Oversight, to which was referred Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 734, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Ooh. Also, to which was referred Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 580, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, to which is referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 46 and 434, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 795, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, to which was referred House Bill 802, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully, Senator Ferguson, Chairman.
Senator Stoddard.
The Committee on Education has a report.
Send your report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Education, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 96, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 390, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Respectfully, Senator Mayor, Chairman.
Sir, for the second.
Mr. President, your Committee on Insurance Industry and Small Business has a report.
Send your report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Small Business, Insurance, and Industry, to which is referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1075, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Respectfully, Senator Root, Chairman.
Senator from Nottoway.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a report.
Send your report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Commerce, Consumer Protection, Energy, and the Environment, to which is referred Senate Bill 545, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, to which is referred Senate Bill 222, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute here to attach do pass. Also, to which is referred Senate Bill 391, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute here to attach do pass. Respectfully, Senator Lager, Chairman.
Senator from San Francisco. Please send your report to us. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 4, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends the concurrent resolution do pass. Respectfully, Senator Engler, Chairman.
Mr. President, could you go to the Senator from Jasper for a privilege motion?
Senator from Jasper, for what reason do you rise?
Mr. President, I have a privileged motion. I would move that the Conference Committee report on the Senate substitute for the House Committee substitute for House Bill Number 3 be taken up for third reading and final passage.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Jasper. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Jasper.
Mr. President, I would now move that the Conference Committee report on Senate substitute for Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill Number 3 be read or be adopted.
You heard the Senator from Jasper moves the adoption of the Conference report on House Bill 3. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the 8th, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you. I'd like to speak on the bill.
Proceed.
And I just want to make a general comment that's going to apply more generally to all the bills. I would encourage my colleagues to take this major operating budget changes for fiscal year 2010 sheet in hand for just a moment, because it has a line on it that in the 10 years I've been in the legislature I've never seen before. But we really need to understand the practical effect of what we're doing. And I think we all do. I'm not suggesting that anybody sitting here in this chamber doesn't now know it, but I think the citizens of our state need to understand exactly what we're doing. Because this sheet quantifies it for us in a way that makes it very plain and straightforward. On this sheet, you show the four different sources of the funds for this particular line item. For example, on 2, normally, or last year, we appropriated $3 billion for our schools. This year, under the fiscal year 2010 CCS, that which we just voted in favor of, we actually reduced the GR portion. That's what the taxpayers of the state actually pay for. From the state's receipt of income tax, sales tax, and whatnot, we actually reduced it this year to $2.4 billion. Now, we were able to do that because there is a line item here that's never here. There's always a federal line item because the federal government sends us a good chunk of the $21 billion or so that we spend every year in transfer payments. Those are your federal taxes coming back to the state to spend and appropriate. But what's new this year is the FedST. Now, I take it that stands for federal stimulus money. Now, at the beginning of the year, there was considerable debate or thought about whether stabilization, not stimulus, budget, because that's actually two different funds. You've got the feds wanted to stimulate the economy with a fiscal hot shot to the economy, but they also wanted to send states money so that we wouldn't have to cut our budgets. And so that is the federal stabilization funds. Now, for schools, we just voted to spend $525 million of federal money. Now, that money, that Fed ST line, that's not going to be there in the future. It's not going to be there in the future. It hadn't been there in the past. It's going to be there for one more year. So what we are choosing to do today as we've walked through these budget bills is we are choosing to use the federal borrowed money to plug holes in our budget to avoid making the cuts that we would otherwise have to make. Now, here's our problem. We're not just doing it to hold our budget at zero. In the case of the school's budget, we're using the borrowed money, most of it borrowed from the Chinese, to actually grow our budget. Not to hold it steady, because after all, we're government, we don't hold anything just steady. So what I hope that we can realize is that if it weren't for borrowed money, if we hadn't as a people, as an American people, decided to borrow a bunch of money, we would actually have had to make fairly substantial cuts to this budget. And all over the land, states would have had to actually cut our budget. And when we started, we were like, well, maybe we won't spend any of the federal fiscal stabilization money on ongoing budget line items, but as the senator from Jasper has helped us understand, the federal government is forcing us to spend it. Forcing us to spend it on line items that don't go away. So let me just stand and warn all those that have children that go to school in the state of Missouri. The operating budget of those schools is being financed by borrowed money that won't be there 2 years from now. And there's going to be a day of reckoning that's coming. So on every budget line item, and we're just looking at three now, we were able to go ahead and cut the state's portion of its commitment on higher education by 10.4%, because we're going to take $148 million of borrowed money to plug that budget, and that's going to allow us to grow the amount of money we spend on higher ed in this state by 3.2% this year over last year. All of it with borrowed money. Now, I realize that we serve in the state legislature, not the federal government. But the obligation to repay is no less ours than it is somebody from California or Iowa or Florida or Pennsylvania. We have an IOU, and we are getting ever further in debt as a people in order to vote for these, not just holding the budget level, but actually increasing all of these budgets. And as you go through this, you're going to see there's, on most of these, there's going to be increases or minor decreases. Now, I see the overall the transportation has a decrease. But I think in the House Bill 21, which we passed the other day, there was like $625 million that was going to transportation. So I don't think overall there's going to be much of a cut there. But on all the major line items, higher ed, social services, schools, we are going to give our voters an increase, but they need to understand that what we're doing is we're borrowing money to make the increase. And it's going to be a rough old day of reckoning coming 2 years from now, and I won't be here. Many of you will have to deal with this when there is no longer this line there called federal stabilization, from which we are drawing hundreds of millions of dollars in borrowed money to patch the massive gap. I personally think, and I'm going to be voting no on a lot of the budget bills, it would have been far better for us to take our lumps now, tell the people the truth, and the truth is this, that it is really stupid to borrow money when you can't pay it back. People said, well, you know what, there's cheap money out there right now. The truth of the matter is, we're borrowing money that we cannot afford to pay back to accommodate a lifestyle that our economy will no longer tolerate. This is what got us in trouble. Living beyond our means, wanting a fancier this or a fancier that than our income would allow us. A bigger house than we could afford, a nicer car than we could afford. We are only extended, and we as a government are voting today to endorse a lifestyle and a way of thinking that got our people in trouble. We are now buying a fancier government than we can afford. And we're voting to do it with borrowed money today. We see the awful trouble that got us in, and let me predict that our votes today are going to get us in exactly the same kind of trouble that the homeowners in this country got themselves in trouble by buying too much stuff on credit and living too high on the hog and beyond their wherewithal. And I know the federal government's incented us to do this. In fact, they've almost, as the senator from Jasper pointed out, blackmail, velvet blackmail, to do it. I still believe that today's votes are votes that are going to be very harmful for the long-term economic health of the state of Missouri. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 23rd was the first I saw to see him recognize.
President, may I inquire the Senator from the 8th?
From the 8th?
Yes.
Senator from the 8th, do you yield?
I do.
He yields. Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I don't want to disagree with a lot of things. I agree with a lot of what you said. There's this one thing you said, never, that we've never done this. In 2004, we used $375 million of federal money to balance our state budget. We had the special sessions with Holden, and then the federal money came down, and that really solved the problem. During that budget year, that's when we did the hybrid securitization. And I think that was that $190 million that we borrowed to balance our state budget. So
I stand corrected.
To say never, we're not.
I
yet,
stand
but
corrected.
But I think the circumstances are different today than they were then.
Well, for example, that was $370 million on an overall budget that probably at that time was around $19 billion. Today, we're going to do, we just did $525 million on one of 13 budget
numbers,
bills.
Different time.
Yeah.
Wanted
yeah, that,
acknowledge
that's,
that there was another occasion in recent memory where.
Oh, and actually, if you want to pull out of Missouri's history dumb budget moves, there's a whole basket to choose from. But it's all, in my mind, the problem is that we're unwilling to tell the people the tough news. You know,
I think we are hoping that the economy recovers, that what we're going through now, that the downturn we're experiencing will bottom out and hopefully we'll see some modest increase. That's my hope. I don't think the recovery will be as robust as the one that happened, you know, after 2004, 2005. And I think some of that was fueled by the very borrowing that you're talking about.
Yeah, and the problem, what's going to undermine
consumer borrowing and the, you know, the poor lending standards and the other things that contributed to what we're having to face today.
But this is pretty typical of the way we do things. This federal fiscal stimulus is going to hit this economy like a ton of brick at a time when the economy is already starting to recover. Because eventually a market economy will correct excesses painfully. And the problem is when government is unwilling to let the market economy function fully because it's unwilling to allow the political pain to be visited on people that the economy is shifted against. For example, the auto industry is the best example. We just wasted hundreds of millions of dollars trying to prop up an industry that the market has moved against, and, you know, ridiculous.
if we'll let the market economy go ahead and move capital around, we'll end up with an efficient marketplace. But we're government, and we don't want people to feel pain.
Well,
so we won't, so, and especially if they're rich. And this is where my, you know, my friends on the other side of the aisle. We have a special aversion to rich people feeling pain. And so we're going to roll in and bail out this industry or that industry rather than simply letting people fail.
Well, so there's some things, unfortunately, that are beyond our control. Some of the spending of, you know, as you know, with the Medicaid changes that were made in 2005, we went back to really the minimum federal standards. And yet, you know, we can continue to have a considerable amount of people who are on our Medicaid rolls who need those services. It costs more to cover that same group of people. There's no way for us to reduce that number of people. What we can try to do is use that money more wisely, stretch it further, deliver better service. But we really can't make any other changes. It would be difficult to go any further than we've already gone on those things. On the education funding formula, we had a formula that prior to the new one that we developed was growing at 12% a year. We made it, the formula that we passed, we basically agreed when we passed that formula that over, 8 years, that we would increase funding by $880 million, which wasn't a 12% increase, which is, and I don't know these numbers exactly, but somewhere around the 4-4.5% range. But I think we made a commitment in that education funding formula to continue to increase public education funding, but do it at a growth rate that was much slower than the previous funding formula. And also base those dollars on achievement in the classroom versus determining success by the amount of money that we put into public education.
But let's be honest. Our solution on public education has always been simply to back a truck up and dump more money on it. And the truth of the matter is, we're not going to make major strides until we are really willing to deal with the underlying reforms that are necessary for K-12 public education. And I know we like to brag that we went home and vote. And I just, for the record, I'm having some buyer's remorse, but I voted in favor of House Bill 2. But we really needed to tell the people that giving 1.4% more to K-12 is probably not going to produce better education by 1.4% in the state, because we are not willing, politically not willing, to do the heavy lifting. And I don't think we've got to go to vouchers and school choice like many of our people believe here, but I do believe with all my heart that we've got to get rid of tenure. We've got to do differential and merit pay. We've got to look at year-round schools if we're going to eliminate the gap.
Senator, I don't want to digress into the greater discussion. I just wanted to make the one point and talk about the reasons why I believe we have some increases in funding. I think in part because of commitments that we made.
Yeah, but you know what, Senator, I understand all that, but circumstances change. You know, I can promise my family that I'm going to take them to Disney World, but if I lose my job or I get a 15% pay cut or a 7% pay cut, I got to go back to the family and say, guys, we can't go to Disney World this year. We're going to go on a canoe trip instead.
Senator, I appreciate your opinion.
Thank you.
Senator from the 1st, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Senator from the 8th.
Senator from the 8th, do you yield? He yields, Senator. You may proceed.
I yield. Senator, thank you for yielding. I appreciate you pointing this out, you know, to the body and to anybody that's listening as far as, you know, how this budget, you know, came together and the idea that we're using the stabilization, you know, money.
We're using the money borrowed from the Chinese.
From the Chinese, right. And I just, while you were in your inquiry with the senator from St. Charles, I just went through and added up across the budget what that number is. It's $782 million total. So $782 million in Chinese money in our budget here.
So we did it not just to make sure that, you know, think about this. Okay, many of the families out there that are paying the freight for state government, they've taken pay cuts. What, you know, certainly the families that have lost a job have taken, you know, where one of the earners in the family has taken it. We're not holding this budget at zero. We're growing this budget.
Right.
Now, I don't know what is the overall growth number on the overall budget from last year. What's our percentage? This is a very important number. You know, because you can see it budget bill by budget bill on the sheet. What is the overall growth number?
By the way, Senator, if I could correct you, a couple of times I've heard you talk about our budget being $21 billion. It's about, I think it's $23 billion plus. It's over $23
billion. Okay. This is a very important number we're about to hear here, because this is the amount by which we are growing state government with these votes today when you add all 13 of them up. They're working on that.
Do you think that would be a number that would be provided to all the members?
Well, because, no, what I want to do, and I'm going to do a simple math equation. You got us a number. What's your number?
$782 million.
Okay, $782 million. It's a 3%. The Senator from Jasper tells me we have grown this budget by 3%. Now, listen to this, Senator. Okay, over this time period, the last few months, now I want to make sure I've got these numbers right. The amount of our income here in the state that, you know, like the state's income, it's actually gone down by over 4%. Okay, let me see if I got the budget guys listening. Our income is actually gone down by more than 4% last budget year. Okay, so think about this. Here, because we're one big family, right? We're the family here is the whole state of Missouri, and we're the people responsible for managing the family finances. All right?
Right.
And so here's our situation we're in. This family is in the same position that Missouri families are in individually. Our income has gone down. That's what happens during a recession. And our income's gone down by more than 4%. But here we stand today, we are going to vote to spend 3% more than we did last year. Now, how do we do this magic? By borrowed money. Now, I got to be careful because the Senator from Jasper could easily object to this characterization, because the federal government is not expecting us to repay these federal stabilization. But ultimately, it's the debt of the American people to the Chinese and all the others that lend us the money to finance this deal. So while our income has gone down, we today are going to vote to spend 3% more. We're not even voting today to hold steady at 0% growth, to hold our budget steady. We're actually going to vote to increase our budget by 3% when our income's gone down by 4%. And we're going to do it by using federal borrowed money to plug in the hole.
And you know what it makes me think about was the comment from the Senator from St. Charles that prior legislatures have made certain commitments, you know, to public education, you know, and other areas or priorities in our state budget. Yet, it's just not fiscally prudent, if you know those facts that you just shared with us, that our income is down, for us to spend more as we move forward. I mean, isn't it our responsibility, Senator? Our first responsibility to come down here and pass a balanced budget on behalf of the people. Constitutionally, we have to pass a balanced budget. So really, we're being very disingenuous.
Well, we'll get over that. We get over that hurdle because we are going to have a balanced budget, but it's going to be balanced with borrowed money from other sources. So, yeah. I mean, it truly is. Here's what we've done. And all over the land, this is what the states and the federal government are doing. Our income's down. We're increasing the amount we spend. And we're borrowing money on a credit card to do it. Now, how did that work out for the American people? Now, here's one other statistic I want. And I'm not filibustering the budget. I want that to be known. This is a choice. In fact, the senator from Jasper, I don't think he would mind me sharing this conversation that he and I had. I think with the election in November that the American people endorsed borrowing and socialism. I think the president was really clear about his view for our country and what we should do. And in fact, arguably, the Republican administration that preceded him was on this path. So I think the American people are eyes wide open on this. You and I disagree with this. You think maybe that a majority of the American people might agree with you and me. I think a majority of the American people think that guys like you and I just need to shut up and sit down. And I'm going to do that here in a second. There's one more statistic that I want. Of the amount of money we are spending on this budget, what percentage of it is federal stabilization? That's the other statistic I want. Not federal, normal federal drawdown. I'm just looking at the federal stabilization and stimulus. These represent the federal one-time fund.
As a percentage of the GR spending or the total budget?
Well, we'll get both of those figures. That's a very good point.
Because of the GR spending, it's going to end up being around 10%. It'll be about 10%.
And one thing that we are doing, Senator, that I think is in this budget that maybe some other states are not, is we are going to take some of our federal stimulus money and spend it next year and not spend it all this year, which I think is, well, hold on. I don't know yet because we've got House Bill 22 coming, and we'll see how that all, because there were many in this legislature that just wanted to spend it all, where we wouldn't have much left at all next year, because the problem is that anybody that I've read that understands the national economy is saying that when the economy comes back, nobody knows quite when that will be, that it will rebound very slowly. This will not be a V, this will be a very wide U, or more maybe like it was a down precipitously, but the recovery will be very, very slow. Now, one thing that I said, you and I think we're standing in the back, and I made this comment. The American economy has the ability, when it's on an upswing, to generate an enormous amount of revenue for government. And during the 1990s, when you had a fairly conservative Republican House and Senate at the federal level, and a Democrat in the White House, you had a perfect arrangement for the taxpayer. I think. This is terrible to say. But it's the truth, and I've gotten to where I don't care about angering my own party. When you have Republican in the White House and Republican Congress, you have drunken spending. When you have a Democrat in the White House and you've got a Republican legislature, you've probably got the best possible situation for the taxpayer. More modest spending. When you have a Democrat in the White House and you have a overwhelmingly Democrat legislature, Lord help us. Because that is spending like a drunken sailor. When one party is in complete control, its ability to exercise fiscal restraint usually goes out the window. So my prediction is that when government revenues start going back up, and I think they will when the economy starts going back up, that our friends on the other side of the aisle who are firmly in control of both branches of government in Washington are going to spend like crazy like never before, and that we won't get the reduction in deficit power that we're going to desperately need in order to keep bond rates, which are the lifeblood of the American economy, at reasonable levels. President Clinton actually managed bond rates very, very well during his presidency because he listened to his economic advisors and also had a Republican Congress that was more inclined not to spend money. So, looking for my statistics now. This is the figures. We're spending on federal one-time funds, stimulus or stabilization. We're spending $783 million in this budget. That represents 3% of the overall budget, but that's if you include when you're doing your division, all the federal money itself. The true the best measure, which you've suggested, is what percentage of our GR? And that number is 10%. That represents the size of the hole that got plugged by borrowing money. That represents the gap of political pain that we and every other legislature across this land, they've got numbers probably similar, have averted the political pain that we have not had to experience. And anybody that served in here, when Governor Holden was governor, we had the last downturn and we didn't have the big federal cavalry coming over the hill. When we held K through 12 at a zero growth rate 1 year, I thought the place was going to come apart. Because, I mean, the political pain of zero growth, of just holding steady, and not growing government for 1 year was almost unbearable for so many in this legislature.
So what's your assessment in that we've talked about, okay, we're retaining about $1 billion as we go into next year of the stabilization money, right, to address, you know, the hole we'll have next year, and some estimate it'll be $1 billion. What's going to happen the following budget year? You won't be here anymore, Senator, but many of us will be, in that I'll bet you next year they'll want to grow government another 3%, right, as we fill $1 billion hole. What's going to happen that year after that?
Hey, I'd be interested. The Senator from Jasper's in a conversation, but I'd be interested to hear. I think Senator from Jasper and I may agree on this point, that in that year when we no longer have the federal money, that what we're going to have is one massive step towards socialism in this country. Because I think that there will be broad agreement all over the United States that the federal government needs to maintain its commitment to the states, and that these monies, Fed ST, that line will drop to the Fed line, and the percentage of our overall budget, how will the federal government do it? It will do it either by more borrowing or by dramatically higher taxes. And I think that's what's going to eventually somebody has to pay for this.
Right.
Eventually somebody that's the news to the taxpayers. There is no magic money machine where you just kick this down the line and somebody else pays for it. Eventually we pay for it. And ultimately we're going to pay for it in compromised living standards. We're going to look like Western Europe, which grows much more slowly than our economy does. Eventually, somebody's going to have to pay for it. And if you think, middle-class taxpayer, that some rich guy is going to pay your bill, wake up! That's not going to happen! The middle-class taxpayer is going to pay the freight for this. It's going to happen. And we are not willing to pay for it now. We are not willing to undergo the pain. We are not willing to undergo the cuts now. And all we've done is kick this down the road. But you see, eventually, like the law of gravity, people have tried for years to ignore and to write away the law of gravity. So, too, you cannot write away the economic laws. And there is an economic law of gravity. Eventually, borrowed money, you have to pay it back. And you have to pay it back with interest. So, you know,
we've fallen into the trap, haven't we?
We have.
Have fallen into the trap.
It is time for me to sit down, because I understand that this is a minority position, that most people do not agree with me. I understand the position that Senator from Jasper is in. I really am not in a position where I'm trying to cast aspersions on my colleagues who will vote for these bills, because the federal government has basically said to us, you know, either they said, take the money, spend it on ongoing line items, creating further peril. You have to do it, or we're going to ship your money to California or someplace else. And I thought the senator from Jasper did a very good job of describing that the other day. But my frustration level overall with where we are in this economy is really, because I think we're at a kind of a scary spot. And I predict the economy is going to come back, and the American people are going to say, you know what, it was all those socialist policies that did it. No! This stimulus is going to hit this economy at a time when the economy is already coming back. Eventually, when prices go down and the cost of labor goes down, people start buying it again. And we're going to falsely come to the conclusion that government solved our problem rather than the natural functioning of the marketplace. And that's the great worry. And it's going to result in policies that only restrain the growth in the American economy and restrain the growth of opportunity for the American people. And with that,
Thank you, Senator.
I'm sitting down.
President,
thank
you. Senator from the
first. Could I inquire the senator from Andrew, please?
Senator from Andrew is not in the chamber. Will the Sergeant of Arms please summon the Senator from Andrew?
Sure. I'll sit down, Mr. President.
All right, thank you. Senator from the 4th, what's the reason you seek?
Inquire briefly of the Senator from the 8th.
Senator from the 8th, you yield.
I'm out of Kleenex, so I yield for a period of time. Maybe my staff will send some more Kleenex.
Senator, is that
yes, I yield, Mr. President, and I apologize.
Senator, he yields, you may proceed.
I apologize, Mr. President, for the breach in my attention to the details.
That's okay, and I don't want to stick too long and belabor this too much. I did want to just point out, that's lovely, the Senator from Clay helping you out there.
He did.
But I did want to just point out a few areas, because you've spoken at length over the last few weeks about sort of the, you know, global picture and the broader view nationally. And I agree with a lot of the things you say. You know, that when you talk about the percentage of, you know, the debt to GDP ratio nationally, I find it problematic as well. The unfunded liabilities, you know, Medicare, Social Security, in addition to the $11 trillion of debt, I find problematic as well. Your statements on public education, of course, you know that I agree with everything you say in those areas. But there's a couple points that I wanted to make here where I wanted to correct some things that you've said. You keep saying if we just, you know, the market economy, if we would just let the marketplace work, do you not associate any of the deregulation of the mortgage industry with any of the problems that we've experienced? That's the free marketplace at work.
You know what, Senator? Listen to me. And what happened? What was the net result? We had excess in our economy, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think was the result of deregulation.
Okay. I understand that many share that view. Okay. Let me suggest to you that in a market economy where you have excess and where you have boom, you also have bust. And many of the people who invested in banks that invested and perpetuated the excess in that area, what's happened to them?
Lost a lot of money. But then,
hold on, let me give you an example. And you know what? I felt I was an investor. I bought Citibank stock. Okay? When it was like at $35 or $40, you know what it is now? Like $3.
Yeah, yeah.
Guess what? The market economy gave me a spanking that I'm not soon going to forget. But you know, the federal government has ridden over the hill and it saved Citibank. My investment should have gone to zero. But there will be excesses in a market economy, Senator, and there will, but here's the problem. We think that we can avoid by more regulation. If you look at the level of regulation in this economy from 1960 to today, we have dramatically increased our level of regulation. Listen,
not,
just listen to me.
Not true in the banking sector.
And I'll stop.
Not
I'll
true
stop.
In the banking
We have
sector.
Dramatically increased our level of regulation overall in our economy, and we still have speculative excesses. And we have bad actors because you can't regulate away dishonesty. That's why you need a great tort system where after the fact, when you have people who are ripping other people off, you have to allow class action lawsuits. You have to allow the ability to go to the court system and seek redress. But to come in with some broad-based regulation, we are going to increase the cost in this country of obtaining mortgages because we are going to way overreact to an excess that was already being solved by the market economy.
Well, I would argue that it hasn't been solved by the market economy, and I agree with you that legislators oftentimes, instead of exhibiting the type of oversight that we should over the private sector, over the bureaucracy, we like to come in sort of fire alarm style control, and then we overreact. And that may be the case with Sarbanes-Oxley, you know, elements of Sarbanes-Oxley and other attempts to regulate the financial industry. But I think it is not an accurate statement to say in the securities industry and in the mortgage banking industry that we have broadly increased regulation over the last generation, because in the 90s we didn't. We did a lot of deregulation, and I think some of what we have experienced in the last couple of years is a result of that deregulation on the federal level. Second point I wanted to raise was...
And by the way, the American people agree with you, because that was Barack Obama's message. I think it's completely inaccurate. It is so easy to say if we just had a little bit more government that we could have prevented this problem, because then we're comforted. We think, oh, there's a nice, easy solution. I just need to spend a little bit more on government regulators. Here's the reality. The government regulators, even if our tax rates were dramatically higher, can't get rid of speculative excesses in an economy. There is no way, even if we spent five times as much on regulation, that we were going to be able to hire, because here's another problem. We're not willing to pay in government. You know the people over at the SEC that are supposed to regulate the securities marketplace? About the most that any one of them makes is maybe $100,000. And they're trying to regulate the kid that they hired from the top of the class at Yale who's making $750,000. The point being this, don't lie to the American people and tell them that if they just had a little bit more government, their life would have, the train wreck would have been prevented. Far better to tell them the truth. Train wrecks are going to happen. And you know what? When they happen, we need to find out who the bad players are and make them pay. And that's what we do in the court system. And my fellow Republicans are not comfortable with that. They're not comfortable with the whole concept that you need to redistribute wealth between those that are tortfeasors and those that are victims of torts.
And I agree with you on that. What I disagree with you on is the assertion, and I hear you on the, you know, the incentives to go into the public sector and be a regulator versus the incentives to go work in the hedge fund industry. But the fact is, if we had, and I'm not an expert in this field, but had we had more regulations than in the 1990s and not seen the growth of the whole derivative, you know, securitization of mortgages and the derivatives and the disconnection between the actual borrower and the investor, you know, the lender, in essence, then I think we wouldn't have seen a lot of what we've seen, a lot of the excesses that we've seen.
Okay, Senator, do you think, maybe, that some of the people who invest in capital in this country have learned a lesson about...
Well, you know, I hope
about,
so, but there's...
Or about derivatives and about the level of risk? Do you think some of the banks that are now no longer people who had invested money in banks that have been completely wiped out are all of a sudden educated about the evils of derivatives? But the problem is we're going to spend the next 2 years coming up with all kinds of regulations running to an area where the people have already learned the lesson, there's no risk there. The next risk to the economy and the next risk to the American people, we're not going to be focused on that because we're going to be over here fighting this fire that was put out 2 years ago. Well, that's the way government works.
Oftentimes, I agree with you. But you know,
I love how much you're agreeing with me.
I don't agree with you on all this stuff. And I don't agree with you that, you know, we've elected a socialist here. I mean, the person who began the huge government bailout was the former president.
Oh, let me tell you something. If your point is that the Republican Party has presided over massive increases in government, contrary to what they would told the American people they would do, I say you are 100% accurate.
And
I think hopefully there'll be some Democrat senators from rural areas and some Republican fiscal conservatives that will stand up and say, can't do this.
Well, here's the last thing that I want to say, and then I'll conclude my inquiry.
Here's what, I'm sorry, interrupt.
You stated a couple times in the last few days that every time that is predictable as the day is long, I think was the phrase you used, that an increase in tax rates, you know, on people in the highest income brackets will cause the economy to come to a grinding halt.
No, you overstated what I said, but roughly.
Will have a chilling effect
on
the economy. And, you know, empirically, it hasn't worked like that. If you looked at 1993 when we did that, the next 8 years were the, you know, unprecedented economic prosperity. The best boom we've had in the 20th century.
Let me ask you,
and then when you look when George, and then when you looked at it happened in 2001, and you had the opposite impact, you fell into recession.
Let me ask you, Senator, do you believe that if something costs more, people buy less of it?
Not in the case of stocks.
Isn't it amazing that this is the one area where you think that the economic rule is bust? Because the truth is, human nature tells us if something costs more, it's the supply and demand curve. It's absolutely the truth. It explains life. If it's more, there are fewer people that can afford it. So, too, if you increase the cost of any activity, capital investment, you will get less of it than you would if you didn't increase the cost of it. Now, trying to understand and get a fair tax system is incredibly difficult.
But you're talking from an economic textbook. I'm talking about what happened from 1993 to 2000, what happened from 2001 on.
But, Senator, when we increased tax rates,
on the wealthiest Americans in 1993, we saw an unprecedented boom. When we decreased them in 2001, we went into a recession.
You're trying to ignore the fact that all of a sudden the Soviet Union collapsed, and so for the next 7 or 8 years we were in a spot where we could spend a whole lot less on our military, and there was this massive transformation of cheap labor coming on into the market economy from behind the former Soviet Union, which had artificially held labor rates incredibly low. Senator, you got an apples and oranges situation.
Now, and I would not say that was the primary cause at all. I would say it was the fact that increased revenues as a result of slightly higher taxes.
You got dramatically higher growth rates. Reduce the deficits,
earn the credibility of the bond market.
Senator, you need to go back and study history. Because you had a historical anomaly in the 1990s.
We did have a peace dividend.
Yeah, I mean, he's inquiring of me. We need to move on. But you need to study history because you had very, very low labor costs that held inflation incredibly low and allowed the American economy to continue to decrease interest rates. That's what led to the experience.
I would say it was not due just to reduce.
It wasn't. It wasn't Bill Clinton raising taxes.
Well,
that's
no,
doggone.
It was the credit. It was interest rates remaining low, and spurring economic growth. Interest rates, I believe, that remained low as a result of the bond market feeling like we weren't going to be in spiraling deficits out of control forever because of the fiscal policy from 1993. Anyway. We can agree to disagree.
We'll see what happens when Obama raises taxes.
We shall see. Thank you for the interest.
We're on the motion. The senator from Jasper. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from... play, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I have one question to the Senator from Jasper.
Senator from Jasper, you yield.
I yield. Senator, just one question about the federal stabilization money. This is the money that was basically unfettered, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so we could have spent it the way that we're spending it here, a variety of other ways, or we could have spent it on a tax cut for Missourians, right?
Well, so we could still do that because the other option was to not spend it all and reserve some for the future.
Right. So really my pointed question is, we could spend the money on a tax cut. Is that right?
If this budget as prepared if these conference reports are adopted, then there is a sufficient balance of dollars available that should the state decide not to maintain its operational levels, that they could cut taxes rather than maintain state service.
In fact, we've got about $783 million,
right.
I think, is the
figure
this year.
Senator, I would point out that it's always been the option of the state to cut services to do a tax cut. There's nothing.
Well, but not cut services. I mean, we're actually growing about 3% here, right? We're not holding the
Well,
we're growing a little bit.
Actually, that 3% takes into account the required maintenance of effort expansion in a number of programs. In terms of discretionary growth, I would say there's little or none.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate the inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from Clay.
I would like to just speak briefly on the bill, and then I, too, am going to sit down.
Proceed.
Thank you. Mr. President, right at the moment, we have, in the private sector, a contracting economy. It is getting smaller. We just heard words today that our economy here in Missouri, that our income is down approximately 4%. We know that this federal stabilization money is the most unfettered money that we have available to us. Regardless of how the federal government's getting it to us, and I don't like it either. I totally agree with what the Senator from the 8th said. But the fact of the matter is we are growing government at the rate of 3% when in the private sector there is a decrease of at least 4%, and some sectors even greater than that. And people wonder why that they think that there is a disconnect between those elected leaders and the people. This is exactly the reason why we are choosing to grow government today when in the private sector everything is contracting. There is a disconnect. At best, we should be holding stable. At best, personally, I think we should be using this money to put it back into the hands that it was wrongfully taken from to begin with, the people of the state of Missouri. But that's what the bottom line of it is. We are choosing today to grow government. I'm probably not going to vote against all the budget bills, but some of them I probably will. But that is because of the great disconnect that exists between what's really going on with the job producers and the taxpayers of the state of Missouri and what we do here today. One is contracting. It's part of the natural forces of the economy. And the other one, for whatever reason, government has one drumbeat that it says, and it's more, more, more. It is never enough. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator for Kate, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
President, if I can inquire the senator from Andrew, and while we wait for him, Mr.
Sergeant Arms, please speak the senator from Andrew. Proceed, Senator, I'm sorry.
If I could speak briefly on the bill, and then hopefully the senator from Andrew will be here before I get done.
Proceed, Senator.
Mr. President, I applaud the work of the senator from Jasper. I don't know of anyone in good times or bad times that would like his job in trying to make 34 different senators happy, yet alone 163 House members. But through yeoman efforts that has gone over this session, it is my hope and belief that ultimately we will be able to adopt an operating budget that will sustain us into the future. With that being said, and I see the senator from Andrew has arrived, Mr. President, I'd ask to inquire the senator from Andrew.
Senator from Andrew, do you yield?
I do. Do you yield, Senator?
Thank you for yielding, Senator. And one of the things that we've worked at and looked at within this budget was approximately $40 million that was labeled basically free money to our higher education institutions that was titled, I think, deferred maintenance, but it has been distributed under a formulary created by the four-year institution to fund Missouri Caring or Caring Missourians or what's the new name of that?
I forget what the actual name was.
It was Prepare to Care under Blunt, but we had a new governor elected.
Caring
so they
Missourians.
They had to change the name. So right. now we're called Caring Missourians.
That's right.
And I think you and I share a belief that, you know, we can do what we want to do in this body, but let's call it what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm not trying to say that we should do this or shouldn't do this. I'm saying if it's maintenance and repair, then let's call it that and use that formula. If it's preparing to care or caring for Missourians or whatever that is, that's okay. But call it that, and then we'll use that formula. What we've done now is we called it maintenance and repair, but we're using the caring for Missourians formula. And my question is, and I don't think, I have no reason to believe that the senator from Jasper has any more knowledge about this than we do. My belief is there's going to be an announcement or a push by the second floor to tell these higher education institutions, you have to use this money for preparing to care, caring for Missourians, whatever it's called. And my fundamental argument with that is, and I feel strongly about this, is that that means that we have an administration that just rope-a-dope the General Assembly. And that is unacceptable. It is unacceptable under a Republican administration. It's unacceptable under a Democratic administration. And I am not saying that I'm for or against prepared care. Actually, to be honest with you, I'm probably for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that health care is a challenge that we have. I think that we're going to have to continue to create jobs in the health care environment. I think that there's a very valid argument as to why we would do that and why we would begin these initiatives. I think the fear is that if you begin a program like this, that is binding us as a body to future to future funding obligation. And I just think this is a very bad precedent, and I think it is very important that we sort this out on this Senate floor before we move forward. And I know that there are lots of challenges that are balanced when they're writing a budget. But I also know that, in my humble opinion, the most important thing that we have to do here is be honest with each other. There are going to be times that we don't agree. You and I don't always agree. But I never, well, not never. I very seldom do I have to wonder where you're coming from. And I think the same is true of myself. I'm normally very open about what my agenda is and why I'm doing what I'm doing. And all I'm asking for is true transparency, and I just want someone to tell me, is this preparing to care, or caring for Missourians, whatever the name is, or is this maintenance and repair?
Right.
And at one point, and the senator from Johnson, I think, was going to offer the amendment, and I don't know what happened with the rewrite of 22. At one point, there was going to be money in to, he was going to offer an amendment to bring these institutions, these deferred maintenance, these schools that were left low, bring them up. And I don't know if that was up or down in the new, all the capital stuff was gone in the new 22.
Okay.
Which, I mean, again, that's
right.
A decision the appropriations folks have to make. Right. And the senator from Jasper whispered that except for the Lewis Park.
And right.
And I guess, you know, Senator, you and I think share the same
right.
the same feeling here, and that is our institution, if this is a prepare to care, caring for Missourians formula, our institution receive less money.
Right.
And that is completely acceptable.
Because we don't have a medical school.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, and I understand that. It costs dramatically less to educate a nurse as it does an MD.
That's correct.
I
accept that wholeheartedly. I respect that. I understand that. But let's be honest with the members of this body and call it what it is.
And I agree, because I have a sneaking suspicion that the media that's sitting listening to our debate right now will get an announcement from the second floor either next week or the week following once we adjourn. All of the universities are going to come together, and they're going to announce how Caring for Missourians has passed the General Assembly. It's labeled to us here in this appropriations bill as deferred maintenance.
Correct.
But just as the governor called all the 4 years in and said, I'll hold you harmless if you don't raise tuition, we're going to see a similar deal unfold. And
we won't withhold your money if you spend it for...
Right, exactly.
I mean, here's the problem.
Exactly.
This budget that we're passing, if our economy does not... begin to turn. Even though I think the senator from Jasper has tried to adjust for the challenging scenarios ahead, I believe that there is a high potential that it will be worse than what we've even adjusted for, and I believe this governor will have to withhold before the end of the 2010 fiscal year.
It is a distinct possibility, but I just want to make the point on two things as it relates to caring for Missourians, because caring for Missourians is in this budget. It's not called caring for Missourians, but it is in House Bill 3. There will be an announcement from the second floor that caring for Missourians passed. Two questions then follow that announcement in this program. The first is, we have two medical schools in the state of Missouri. UMKC is a six-year program, and the University of Missouri is a four-year program. How are we going to continue and sustain this caring for Missouri into the future to make sure we actually graduate those medical students? Because the additional slots that are created in the vast majority of the money in caring for Missourians is associated with the education of an MD, a medical doctor. Now, all of our regional schools get some money for nurses and those that have health care programs, but by and large, the lion's share goes to medical students. We are going to be confronted either next fiscal year in 11 or in 12 by, I think, the University of Missouri saying, you have to sustain this program. We have now got medical students that are here that if you don't give us more money to sustain this program, we're going to have to close them out. And it's going to be a difficult choice for the General Assembly. The second thing that I forecast will occur, because I have yet to have my fears alleviated by either the second floor or the University of Missouri, and that is that the Missouri taxpayers are going to pour a substantial amount of money to create more health care providers in the state of Missouri. And there are no guarantees on this program that the slots that are created will go to Missourians. I have no desire, as a member of this General Assembly and a representative of my constituents in Southeast Missouri, to spend their money to educate a plastic surgeon in Miami, Florida. I have no desire whatsoever for that to occur. That individual doesn't need the taxpayer subsidization from Southeast Missouri to become a plastic surgeon in Miami. That is why I support scholarship programs that tie the students we help get their education to stay in the state of Missouri. So to put it succinctly, my second fear is that if we fund this program, there is the potential that out-of-state students are going to fill those slots, take the generosity of the Missouri taxpayers, and then leave the state of Missouri and never really provide the health care that this is all set up to provide. And I would hope that the small time that we've taken on the Senate floor to discuss this program, that when the media is called into that press conference by the governor and the four-year institution, that they would ask those two simple questions, because I have yet to have them answered, and hopefully the media can get an answer to them. Number one, what do you do to continue the educational progression of these students when the money runs out? And number two, what are you doing to guarantee that the Missouri taxpayers are not subsidizing the training of medical professionals that have no intention of practicing medicine in the state of Missouri? And that's what I would like to have answered from the second floor when they make this press conference announcement that caring for Missourians has passed the General Assembly. And I would like answered by the University of Missouri when they implement this program into the future. And if we called it caring for Missourians, I think we would have had answers to that.
Well, in full disclosure, and in defense of the senator from Jasper, so I had the same conversation with him. And although he has no firsthand knowledge that this will or will not be carried for Missourians. He believes, I think it's an accurate statement, that this could be that, but he was adamant about not calling it that because he is not willing to obligate this body to future funding obligations.
And I concur with him, but I would respectfully state that you understand the prisoner's dilemma that we're going to be put in.
No,
what we're going to do is we're going to get all these new students that are in these slots, and they're going to come and they're going to say, if you don't give us more money, they're going to throw me out of medical school. And really, the core expenditures that are associated with this is faculty, as I understand it. So then we're going to say, well, we were able to attract all these new faculty and all these new slots to increase our training. And if you don't give us more money, we're going to have to fire these faculty to increase our training and where our class sizes are. So I respect wholeheartedly, and I had the same conversation with the Senator from Jasper, and I agree with the methodology that he's there. And he is clearly stating to all of the universities, this is one-time funding. But I have yet to see a university when you look them in an eye and say this is one-time funding that they actually acknowledge and live with that statement.
Yep. No, when we first had our conversation about this, when I first found this, I was very disheartened. I was pretty fired up because I felt like it was an act of defeat trying to move this through a body that they know they could never pass. And after my discussions with the senator from Jasper, I do not believe it is his intent in any shape or form to obligate this body to future funding obligations. So I think the press needs to be very clear about this, and they need to articulate this very clearly in all of their wonderful stories they're going to write about the budget process, and that is that every institution that's receiving this money, one-time money, even though it's going through a prepare-to-care formula, we would highly suggest and encourage these institutions not to spend this money on reoccurring costs.
And expect future funding to subsidize when the one-time money goes away.
If they are going to do capital projects, if they have to buy equipment to begin to put this in place, if they have to do certain things like that, one could argue those are legitimate.
Correct. And I concur. I concur.
But do not come back here year after year thinking that we have now begun a program, because I do not believe it is my intent. I do not believe it was your intent. I do not believe in my heart of hearts that it was the senator from Jasper's intent to start a reoccurring program.
And I would concur. And the only thing that I would add into that succinctly put statement on this issue, and I'll sit down and end my inquiry, is that the question needs to be asked, what are we doing to guarantee that only Missouri students that will stay here and actually practice medicine in the state of Missouri are the ones that fill these additional slots?
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Ms. President.
We're on the motion of the Senator from Jasper. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. In closing, I want to express my appreciation for the last dialogue, which at least had something to do with House Bill 3, and to suggest that the earlier conversation reminded me of folks who are influenced by faculty at Stanford University in the Economics Department on the one hand, or Columbia University on the other. So these different perspectives exist in higher education, and in that sense relate to this bill. With that, I close.
The Senator from Jasper moves that the Conference Committee report on House Bill 3 be adopted. Madam Secretary, read the bill and call the roll.
Senators Barnes, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Dave, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer, Justice, Lager, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Nadler, Pierce, Ferguson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Schmidt, Scoff, Shields, Schumacher, Smith, Stouffer, Vogel, Wilson, Wright-Jones.
Senator from the 23rd votes aye. Senator from Howe votes no. Senator from the 24th votes aye. Senator from the 2nd votes aye. Senator from Lawrence votes aye. Senator from Jefferson votes aye. Senator from St. Clair votes aye. Senator from the 10th. That will be done. Senator from Monroe votes aye. Senator from Clay. Senator from the 1st. Senator from Green. Senator from St. Francis, did you vote? Senator from Cape, I'm sorry. Votes aye. By your vote, 29 aye, 4 no, the conference report is adopted. Senator from Jasper.
Conference committee report on the Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute for House Bill number 3 be read a third time and placed upon its final passage.
You heard the motion from the senator from Jasper. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Seeing none, senator, you're recognized to close.
I renew my motion.
The senator from Jasper moves that House Bill 3, recommended by the conference report, be third read and finally passed. Madam Secretary, read the bill and call the roll.
Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 3, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Higher Education et al. Senators Barnett, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Days, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer, Justice, Lager, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Knobler, Pierce, Ferguson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Schmidt, Scott, Shields, Schumacher, Smith, Stouffer,
aye.
Vogel, Wilson, Wright-Jones.
Senator from Green. Senator from Lawrence. As an aye. By your vote, 29 aye, 4 vote no, the bill having received a constitutional majority is declared passed. Without objection, let the journal show that the titling and perfecting motions were made and carried. Senator from St. Francis.
Mr. President, without objection, the Senate committee order of business announcements.
On the order of business of announcements, Senator from St. Francis.
As much as I hate to, we're going to have to break now because we do have one committee that they have to get a hearing here this morning. So could I inquire the Senator from Lawrence?
Senator from Lawrence, do you yield?
I yield.
He yields, Senator. Proceed.
The committee's going to meet immediately. Is that correct?
Immediately.
All right. Are you thinking you need more than an hour?
We will do our very best to operate within whatever time limit you give us. The way my committee runs, all witnesses get 2 minutes to make their case.
Let's break and come back at 1:30. That's what we're doing. So, anybody else has enough?
On the order of business of announcements, Senator from Lawrence.
The Committee on General Laws will meet immediately upon adjournment in SCR 1.
Any other announcements? Senator from St. Francis.
No further business coming before the body. I move that the Senate stand in recess until 1:30 this afternoon.
You've heard the motion of the Senator from St. Francis. All those in favor, aye. All those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand in recess until 1:30.